just trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing that you do that as an insult.
You mean true for you is different from true for anybody else?
Have yeah,
to
absolutely, because I can't
think either got to be true or not.
I can't, no.
Well, it's that time again. Welcome to Aurelia Radio number 124A, recorded Friday, September 2nd, 2016, where we dismantle the current events for your edutainment through mostly rational conversations that make you go, oh, really? I'm your host, Andy Cowan, with my usual suspects. I've got Daniel Atherton and Stephen Griffith with me this evening. Welcome back, gentlemen. Always lovely to have you.
Good to be here.
After protocol, it is definitely good to be here.
Oh, very good. Is there anything that you'd like to get off your chest right at the start of the show?
No, we've got a lot to get through. There's some boxes that are a bit heavier than others.
Oh, yeah, well, yes, that is
The only thing I have to go off my chest is just the standard hilarity of being a lifelong Floridian and watching people freak out about a hurricane.
It is kind of amusing, yeah.
Especially when you're in the middle of the state.
Yeah, for those of you that are somehow completely unaware that there happens to be a hurricane trompsing through Florida after 11 years of no activity whatsoever. There's one there. I thought it said, tropical storm and then Hurricane Hermione, but it's actually Hermine, which is, mm-hmm. or is it Her? Yeah, Hermine.
It's Hermine.
Which is just kind of a weird name, but.
Well, we had a Gaston and now it's Hermine.
That's true. There was Gaston. Yeah, no one blusters like Gaston. Yeah, all those memes. Those were fantastic. If anything should have hit Walt Disney, it should have been Gaston. That would have been epic. So, but that's not what happened. So instead, we just have a little piddly, Category 1 hurricane barely there, trompsing on through, and it's just it's knocking down weak trees and making a lot of rain. I will say this. At least it went through Florida and not up to Louisiana.
Yeah. They don't need it anymore.
They don't need it. They so don't need it. I'm sure that someone would call that an act of God. And then it wouldn't be under insurance.
Well, anything when it comes to floods pretty much is an act of God. So you need to have flood insurance.
You can have flood insurance, but you know what flood insurance doesn't cover? Rising water. Yeah. That look on your face? That's correct. That's right. Yeah. Flood insurance does not cover rising water because that's the way they write it.
Is there rising water insurance?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. I guess that would be a rider. You'd have to have that as a rider, like Aflac. It'd have to be sold by a duck.
Is this what Rangers it feels like?
I don't know. It might be. Okay. Well, let's carry on here. Audience feedback and errata from previous shows and things like that. We do make mistakes, obviously. And, please, if you find one, pause if you're listening to us in post or, just remember, write yourself a note to send us a note to ohreallyradiopodcast@gmail.com. Or, of course, you can call it in 470-222-6759. We'll also take SMS messages there as well. Standard messaging rates apply. Please, no dick pics. Okay. So one of our friends of the show, I mentioned him last week, Bill Hunsaker, he is still needing to move by October 31st. So we still have some time to possibly help him out. If you have a few dollars to spare, I've listed his GoFundMe. It's GoFundMe.com/HelpBillMove in camel case. So help. Then capital Bill Move. Yeah, you can do the math on that one. And the link, of course, is in the show notes, which will be on the website at oreallyradio.com for show 124A, most likely. also with the EpiPen. So, of course, the EpiPen, if, again, you've been under the same rock that told you that there was no hurricane, then you probably didn't hear that Mylan, the current manufacturer of the EpiPen, the Kleenex of this epinephrine auto-injection pen that helps people stop dying from anaphylactic shock due to severe allergies. Since they jacked the price up to exorbitant fees simply because they could. The backlash has been terrible for them, so they've been have to reel it back a little bit. So now they're offering a generic EpiPen, whatever that's all about. And, of course, massive coupons.
Coupons, but not a reduction in price.
Right.
Because managers is essentially what we got.
Exactly.
For an explanation.
Yeah, something along those lines. And, you know, actually, I think one of the weird things that they said was a justification for raising the price was marketing. That's not a reason.
Oh, yeah, the marketing costs for the EpiPen are just exorbitant.
Yeah, considering
even
it's
though it literally sold itself
like the only thing that everyone knew that would work in such a case, and you pretty much had to have it, otherwise you were risking death. Your money or your life.
EpiPen is the Band-Aid or Q-tip of its thing, because yes, folks out there who don't realize this, Band-Aid is its own brand, so is Q-tip. That is not the the description of every single cotton swab in existence.
Same with Kleenex. It's
but it has become synonymous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By
their own admission, a monopoly.
They have a near monopoly. Thankfully, it's a near monopoly because there is an alternative. And the alternative is the, what is the name? What is the name? Oh, I'm clicking on the wrong window. I have too many windows.
Adrenaclick?
I believe it was Adrenaclick. Let's see. Yes, Adrenaclick. Let me see if I can blow this sucker up here so that you can watch in the live stream, and it looks like nothing's working. No, nope, here we go. Okay. Adrenaclick. Okay, so it's technically a different drug. However, it's also technically the exact same thing. So basically, the way they've patented things... This is the way that medicine works in this country and around the world. If you have a slightly different delivery mechanism, you can patent it under a different trademark, and then you can charge whatever you want for it, and it's no longer a generic type, so it doesn't fall under any of those rules. So when a company like Mylan, or any of them out there, decide that they need to keep that product under wraps. They don't want any competition. They will make a subtle change and then reapply for the patent. It does nothing to the actual thing. Absolutely nothing. I don't know if the auto injector takes longer. Thank you for being out there in the chat room. Same medicine, but the mechanism inside the tool is slightly different. So it's the same medicine.
Yeah, it's an epinephrine injection. I mean, it says it right in the box.
Yeah. Now, the thing about these auto injectors is it's a spring. That's really all it is. There's no like gas cylinder no explosive bolts or anything that launches it into you.
Sound.
Yeah, it is not a hypo spray. You know, that you put it up against your neck or anything like that. 10 seconds instead of 3? I don't think so, but having it at all is probably a better chance. I'm not seeing anything about it being like that, but it is much, much less expensive. Let me see. Whoa, what the heck? Okay. Crazy websites. Changing that around. We have Gerrianner in the chat room,
yes.
Just chatting us up about this, and I'm very pleased that you're out there. I love the good conversation. Let's see here. So where is it? No, that's not it. Anyway, the generic is about $100 for two. So that's an enormous difference in price. Oh, so okay. Wait. I'm sorry. Strike that. Reverse it. Adrenaclick generic pens, $365.
So
$1 a day for a year will keep you alive, possibly.
So it's the price that they were charging like 3-4 years ago for the EpiPens.
Yeah. However, because it is a different drug, then...
Well, different mechanism.
I'm saying drug. I'm putting big bunny ears on it. So the patented drug, Adrenaclick, even though it is epinephrine, you know, the patented drug has to then be written as a different prescription. So your doctor that's trying to keep you alive, you know, due to possible anaphylactic shock, if they write, you know, EpiPen, then the only thing that you can get is an EpiPen.
Is EpiPen, because that's the prescription. That's
right.
The script's written.
So if they... I wonder if they could get away with saying epinephrine auto-injector.
Uncertain.
I wonder if that would then allow the pharmacist to say, yeah, I don't think you want that EpiPen, but this one over here is also an epinephrine auto-injector.
But, folks, if you have the EpiPen problem out there, Adrenaclick. Ask your physician by name.
Let's see. I'm trying to figure out whether or not there was a difference in how long...
Shelf life?
No, because the shelf life is typically a year. It's the same active ingredient in the drug. How about that? Okay. Active ingredient in the drug is epinephrine. Oh, there's a Consumer Reports article. Okay, so let's see what that comes up with. Coming up.
Also, due to discounts that you can get from various websites, Adrenaclick you can get for as cheap as $146 a pair at, like, a Walmart.
Excellent. Okay. So I will add this Consumer Reports link to our show notes, also available after the show at our website. Copy that. So hopefully this will at least keep people properly stocked and not, you know, on death's door. Because we like our people out there, and we don't want them to die, especially our fans who happen to be listening. I mean, because really.
It shouldn't be your money or your life.
It really shouldn't be, so we're working for that.
The nice thing is, looking at one of the articles that I posted there, the one from philly.com,
mm-hmm.
They actually also say, I just lost it. Where is
That's
it?
Not it.
There will soon be more generics on the market. Teva Pharmaceuticals said it intends to introduce an epinephrine auto-injector in 2017. Mark Baum, CEO of Tiny Imprimis Pharmaceuticals, claimed his company will have a $100 generic kit available by the end of the year.
Yeah, that's well, that was what I was starting to look at.
Auto-injectors.
Yeah, there we go. I've got that that section highlighted right there.
But
customizable auto-injectors.
I think the only reason that those are coming about is because Mylan's taking a wallop in the press. And now this has actually become part of Clinton's platform.
Is
pharmaceutical pricing reforms, which I don't know how the wording on that's going to work.
But again, besides that, this is also, as a lot of people out there who are the hardcore, you know, GOP capitalists and economists would like to say, oh, look, this is the market making its desires known.
Well,
not it's really.
It's people making outrage known. And it does take a populist to get outraged about something before anything will actually make any meaningful change. So it would seem. Okay. So... those links are in the show notes. We want you all to stay healthy. You know, please don't get epinephrine in the bottle and fill your own. You know, that's
unless
really,
you know exactly what the hell you're doing.
Yeah, unless you happen to be a phlebotomist or something and you know exactly where to stick people, just don't do it. Really, you know, leave that to a hospital. You know, if a hospital can do it, then that might save you an awful lot of money, as opposed to just carrying one of these around. So hospitals really ought to be required, I think, actually, to carry them in syringes. I would think that would be better for us, but, you know, anyway, get the right thing, stay alive, stay healthy. That's what we want you to do. So, into potpourri and various other things that we happen to have here. Just a little aperitif before we get into history and some other things. I don't really know what to think about this. It's kind of strange. But well, apparently, the Trump campaign, as we know, really likes hats. They've got their the big red, you know, Make America Great Again hat, made in China.
I have some insight into the hats.
Okay.
Thanks to my real life job, my 9-to-5, any sort of merchandise, your campaign merchandise, usually sells for a good chunk of money. And so they're making maximized profit on merch sales. So having more merch allows the campaigns to buy more advertising, pay for more stuff.
Uh-huh.
Like the Gary Johnson campaign is trying to, as it's run to November, sell $10 million worth of merch.
Wow.
And that's a third-party candidate. Now, just keep that number in mind. That's a third party, and they're hoping to do $10 million worth of merch before the election in November. Trump, who has a lot more capital sitting on, well, possibly, if he actually opened up his own pocketbook.
Yeah, it's debatable. Yeah.
But with the introduction of all this new merch and a rabid party base who will buy it, and buy it for that inflated price, can then use that money combined with his already current strategy of let's just say outrageous things and get free advertising, can shore up its coffers. So it's the same deal that you get with baseball. I know I don't have a lot of sports fans on the panel, but in baseball, a lot of the different teams will produce one-off or special jerseys and shirts to market and sell. And those things are huge, huge markup. So the baseball clubs make tons and tons of money off this merch. Same principle here. It's just in political merchandise,
so as,
which has
as
had
yogurt.
A long and storied history.
So as Yogurt from Spaceballs would say, merchandising, merchandising, merchandising. It's where the real money from the campaign is made.
Very much so. And also, that money not only goes into the marketing machine, but also helps pay for staffers. A lot of the things that are vital to the campaign are paid for through merchandise sales.
Yeah. Well, when
so having a new thing and then marketing it for free...
Yeah,
is just a win-win, and so, straight out of a Trump playbook.
So using Rudy Giuliani to use this marketing ploy, as you put it, this is all surrounding Trump's latest foray into our southern neighbor, Mexico. The hat says, "Make Mexico Great Again, also." Also.
Which apparently, if you read the story, Trump was insistent on putting in the also.
I'm
himself
not a bit surprised about this. You know, this shouldn't have happened in this particular universe. I believe we may have split into an alternate universe at some point.
No.
I am looking for a DeLorean. I'm not sure exactly where it is, but, you know, it. Biff Enterprises here, you know, is definitely on the move. But I would not have believed this story. This is something out of The Onion. Until the picture there with Rudy Giuliani in a hat, for one. He never wears hats.
No, he wears hats.
Not on stage.
I remember him wearing caps during 9/11. FDNY caps.
Well, again, another political kind of thing. Yeah, it's just a banner.
But still, no, he will wear a hat if it has political gains to be made.
So, but there's the picture, and it says, "Make America Great Again," also. All right there. What is there to say?
And Senator Jeff Sessions was also forced to wear the hat.
Oh, wow. He was. At least he creased his bill better than Giuliani did. Giuliani, like, I swear, Giuliani looks like he had balled that hat up and put it in his pocket. Like, I'm not wearing this damn thing.
No, Giuliani strangled that thing, hoping it would die. Then it crawled onto his head, and he said, damn it, all right, we're going to the stage.
I mean, it really does look like
it looks like somebody just quickly flopped it on his head and said, go up to the podium.
Congratulations, GOP. You made your bed with this. You're stabbing aside with him. So he gets to lead you through this clown car.
And again, if you are going to speak on behalf of the campaign is going to get its claws in you and use you to how they want to use you.
Well, he's definitely using.
Here's the thing: for Giuliani, I completely understand why he's doing this. This is getting him back in the public eye, so he can go around and do another set of speaking, doing speeches and getting paid for speaking fees. This is putting him back in the spotlight for doing the conservative book tour thing. So this is actually not about politics. This is all self-interest. As opposed to Sessions, I have no idea why he is hitching his wagon to this unfortunate horse.
There are people that don't think this is an unfortunate horse. Yeah, I know. It seems really hard to believe, but it's true. People really think this is the best thing possible.
Well, I can almost wrap my head around it based on recent polls this week in the likability polls for both candidates. There's only one point that separates the two of them.
That's because everyone hates both of them.
Yeah.
The thing about Trump is that a lot of the hate is within his own party. They don't really particularly like him either, but he's what they've got. And they hate Hillary more.
Again, it's...
by one point.
Hillary is liked by 37% of those polled. Trump is liked by 36% of those polled. So, again, this is a historic race. We are seeing history in the making.
That's below 50% already. You know, usually that likability test is within a president's first year. And then if they drop below 50%, I don't know. Are they going to make it a second term? Are they going to just be impeached because of like a vote of no confidence or something? I mean,
the interesting thing, if you're going through a political historical perspective, and Steve, you can by all means chime in and back me up on this or refute me. When it comes to likability, we have seen a shift in American presidents. Because Clinton, despite all the controversies and whatnot, was still liked. Even in the darkest points, he was still in the 40s. In likability.
Yeah.
Most of the time, he was hovering 50, 60% approval rating. But with W, that quickly shifted down, stayed down, and he was reelected, and it was still down. Obama, because, look at our racial history, folks.
We are definitely not post-racial America. That is
also pulled down. With low approval numbers, he got reelected.
However, he never did reach the single-digit approval rating that Congress did.
No. Again, Congress has always had a history of being liked less than our executive.
Yeah, but I don't think ever in the single digits.
No, that's historic. Single-digit approval rating for Congress, that's not something you commonly see in history.
As I can tell that there is Google Foo going on to fact-check as we're talking.
As we're going. But
I can tell. Yeah. There's a look now. I know what you're doing.
But while politics has always been, for the most part, looked down on in this country,
yeah.
This is these people are so disagreeable, and somehow they got the nominations, both of them. We can definitely see on the Democratic side there was some hanky panky. There was some voter disenfranchisement.
Well, we're going to talk about some of that of even more intended voter disenfranchisement a bit later in the show. But I think we should probably
the names you brought up, provable.
Yeah.
The names you brought up, Clinton maxed out at 73. His lowest was 36.
Okay.
Bush Jr., 92 at the highest and 19 at the lowest.
Oh!
Obama, 76 at the highest, 37 at the lowest.
Okay. Well, here we're already seeing these two in the 30s. They haven't even taken office.
Yeah.
Oh, good. At least I was correct. They apparently only hit single digits once for a percent approve. And that was
Congress.
Yeah. And that was November 7th through 10th in 2013. But yeah, that's still terrible. So thank you very much, chat room. I'm probably butchering your handle. Jerry Anner? Jerry Anner?
That looks like it. Jerry Anner. But
thank you very much. Yeah. I'm putting those links directly into the into the show notes. So thank you.
No, this is precisely where we're at, and it is astonishing to see. There's a reason why the rest of the world thinks we're all nuts.
And we used to be at the top of the world. We used to be the thing everybody looked to. Now the lunatic's going, essentially using the old term, Grandpa's got Alzheimer's and is going nuts.
Well, but we're not the old analogy. Country.
The analogy is we used to be the city on the hill. Now we're
now
in the swamp.
Now that city's on fire.
Yeah.
And we've said it ourselves.
No, I like to think a sinkhole just opened up right underneath a solid hole. Possibly.
Maybe it's Atlantis sinking beneath the waves. But beyond that, hey, let's talk about some history.
History some time.
Some specific history, not just random history that pops into our heads as is apt around here. We're real good at tangenting. So, all right. On this day in history, this is specifically this day, September 2nd, okay? 1789, Congress founds the U.S. Treasury. Because we kind of needed it, the whole war thing. Had to have a war chest. In 1885... there was a whole bunch of white folk that went out and massacred a whole bunch of Chinese folk out in the Wyoming territory. So, yeah, happened.
Racial history, folks.
Yeah. There are links to all of these in the show notes as well, so if you want to do any deep dives into history, please do. Absolutely. This is good stuff. Also, some celebratory news, unless you happen to be Japanese, and that would be 1945, September 2nd. It was VJ Day when Japan surrendered. And, of course, we did irradiate several hundred thousand of them. Okay. Also, on this day in 1959, Ford introduced the compact, fuel-efficient Ford Falcon. Not quite a Millennium Falcon. No Kessel runs. No, not with that. No. So, in 1969,
you see that vehicle around anymore today?
Not so much, but it is interesting that a fuel efficient car showed up in 1959. That was
a fuel efficient compact. Yeah,
that was unusual for an American car manufacturer, especially post World War II when everything was hot rods. So
everything was dandy and well to do.
1969, September 2nd, the first ATM, automatic teller machines, something that were very commonplace now, the first one opened for business. It's something, these things that are so ubiquitous in our normal culture, it's just interesting to realize, it's not really that old. But boy, did they take hold. They're everywhere. And now we think they're like, that's old school. We don't need that anymore. Somehow. Boy, we still need ATMs. Cash is still king.
Mm-hmm.
And some sad news, combined with some other sad news from this week. In 1973, Lord of the Rings creator J.R.R. Tolkien died.
Yet I still love the fact that he died in 1973.
What? Why?
Just because of the reverse of that. You know the One Ring to Rule Them All poem?
Yeah.
We were given to the elves.
Three rings for the elven kings under the sky. Seven rings for the dwarf lords in their halls of stone. Nine rings for mortal men who are doomed to die. One for the dark lord on his dark throne.
I don't think anyone actually poisoned him. Or, were intent on him dying that year or anything like that. But yes. Yes, indeed. It is interesting and certainly a way to remember when he died. In 1998, a UN court hands down the very first international conviction for genocide.
Yep, I remember that.
That was a big one. Yeah, it's like we're getting into our normal lifespans here. This is common memory.
Yeah, that was the Kosovo War.
And something a little closer to our geek hearts, in 2001, September 2nd, Cartoon Network debuted Adult Swim.
Good times.
I did not find that on history.com, but definitely something that stood out to me. And in 2013, Diana Nyad, age 64, swam from Cuba to Florida. Quite the record-setting thing. I don't believe that I would ever be able to make that kind of swim, much less at the age of 64. So, but I suppose she was also properly motivated. Actually, wasn't that like her third attempt or something like that? I seem to remember.
I think that may have been one of her attempts. The thing that also gets me is she first gained national attention really in 75 when she swam around Manhattan. And then she swam from North Bimini to Juneau Beach, Florida. North Bimini is the Bahamas, by the way. That was 1979. And so it was her fifth attempt to go from Cuba to Florida without the aid of a shark cage.
That woman is a fish. Absolute fish.
I think we have found Michael Phelps's actual mother.
Maybe grandmother at this point.
Yeah.
But no, mom would work. Mom would work. Okay. And also we'd be remiss if we did not mention the passing of Gene Wilder this week. So that very, very sad news. Absolute comic genius. And from all reports that I can find anywhere, a genuinely nice person. I didn't find anything that contradicted any of the nice words. No bad stories of him just being an asshole to people or anything like that. He was just a nice guy. In fact, on my wall, should you happen to be following me on Facebook, I put out a little story about him and Marty Feldman, who had died far too young. But apparently he was really, really close friends with him and wanted to take care of anything that, he left out in his life that he couldn't finish up, things like that. So it was really, a great human being was lost this week. So very sad, but tis
by a good long life.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I don't think, yes, I do have a little bit of music for our logical fallacy of the week. A little bit. Come on. You're supposed to play now. You're not playing.
It's your time.
Really? Even in the future, nothing works. Just keep that in mind, folks. Even in the future, nothing works. Okay. Well, screw that. So, our logical fallacy this week is the sweeping generalization fallacy. I'm sure that this has occurred to many people in their lives. This has happened to me on many occasions. In fact, I've often used it myself just to get through an argument. But a sweeping generalization applies to a general statement too broadly. If one takes a general rule and applies it to a case into which, due to the specific features of the case, the rule does not apply, then one commits the sweeping generalization fallacy. This fallacy is the reverse of the hasty generalization, which I'm sure that we've all made as well, which infers a general rule from a specific case. So, basically, the overarching sweeping generalization takes everything out, you know, the baby with the bathwater and everything in that generalization, omitting any possibility that it couldn't be true, as opposed to the hasty generalization, which takes those little individual snowflakes and makes a case out of those instead. So, for example, children should be seen and not heard. Little Wolfgang Amadeus is a child. Therefore, Little Wolfgang Amadeus shouldn't be heard. No matter what you think of the general principle that children should be seen and not heard, a child prodigy pianist about to perform is worth listening to. The general principle does not apply. Fair enough. And okay, so in theory, I'm supposed to also have a voicemail promo here. So let's see if that works.
Hi, O'Reilly Radio listeners. This is your host, Andy Cowan, calling my voicemail to make sure that it still works. Please consider calling us, 470-222-6759. Bye!
Oh, good, it still worked. And let's try this one. Really? But I like that one.
Yeah, it's a good one. We need to see if it can work. Hit it with a hammer.
I guess I need to hit it with a hammer. This is not happening. No, it's not happening. Anyway, let's get into some science, bitches. I don't have time to make an apple pie from scratch or create the universe. But apparently neither does SpaceX, as they continue to try and launch things as quickly as possible. Thursday this week, they had a bit of a catastrophic kaboom, an earth-shattering kaboom. At 9:07 on Thursday, SpaceX experienced a devastating explosion while completing a routine static test fire in preparation for launch. Is not so good. Not so good. Why still seems to be a big anomaly. We don't know exactly why this happened. We do know that no one was injured because proper protocol was followed. So there was no one on the deck out there. It was launch pad 4D. It was on fire for quite some time. The payload was lost. And that was the AMOS-6, AMOS-6 satellite. It was on the Falcon 9 at the time that it was destroyed. A nearly $200 million satellite, Atmos-6, was set to be launched to geostationary orbit to provide internet to various locations in Africa as part of Facebook's internet.org initiative. It was Facebook's first satellite that they were going to launch. Elon said that the explosion occurred near the upper stage oxygen tank, though they don't know why, again, still. Mark Zuckerberg, of course, the CEO and founder person of Facebook, the, you know, internet.org guy, says, I'm here in Africa. I'm deeply disappointed to hear that SpaceX launch failure destroyed our satellite that would have provided connectivity to so many entrepreneurs and everyone else across the continent. Fortunately, we have developed other technologies like Aquila that will connect people as well. We remain committed to our mission to connect everyone, and we will keep working until everyone has the opportunities this satellite would have provided. I imagine they could probably build another one. But, of course, that would be generating another $200 million plus all the other... I don't know. What is it to launch a satellite now? Like, just budget a billion?
I don't know.
It's expensive. I don't know what...
Cheap.
Don't know what it could be, but yeah, it's a lot. let's see. So damage assessment, this news comes to us from TechCrunch that dove in and figured out, okay, what do we know now? What do we actually know about what's going on with this thing? Which is of course important. So, in this case, the rocket and the payload were destroyed, obliterating hundreds of millions of dollars worth of equipment. Significant damage to the launch pad infrastructure at Cape Canaveral. Nobody died. Who foots the bill? Well, the rocket launches with pricey payloads, usually space insurance companies. As noted by CNBC, there are only about 50 insured launches each year, paying about $750 million in premiums to a handful of companies. Statistically, about 1 in 9 U.S. launches are expected to fail. So if you're sending a payload worth over $100 million, it's probably smart to get insurance for it. I would say yes. Yeah. So for SpaceX specifically, the failure rate is lower, with just 2 out of their 29 Falcon 9 launches failing. The first one occurred in June 2015. They have launched a lot. I mean, the first loss was June 2015. This is only their second, and it wasn't really the launch system. It was something weird that took this one out on the pad. Mm-hmm. So those Falcon 9, first stage rockets seem to be pretty robust.
To answer your question from earlier, the average price typically is between either $50 million for the low end, upwards of $400 million. Okay. However, SpaceX and the Falcon 9s have changed that game in the fact of their standard Falcon 9 is around $62 million for launch. The Falcon Heavies are $90.
Okay.
So significant savings for even the really big stuff over standard launch capabilities.
And apparently, marine cargo insurance is the stuff that would cover this specific instance of mishap.
Right. According to Peter B. DeSelding of Space News, the launch insurance only kicked in after the engine ignited. That's their demarcation. It's possible that the damages could be covered by another type of insurance known as marine cargo insurance. We're getting this information from, tweets by people in the know. So he had tweeted out, "SpaceX explosion didn't involve intentional ignition." I love that. I love that phrase for an explosion. It was not intentional ignition.
So the launch insurance doesn't have to cover it.
Right. So it isn't covered by that. So space.com insured AMOS-6 for $285 million in marine cargo market. Not space insurance market. Launch plus 1 year policy would kick in at, so the launch policy would kick in at rocket ignition. And then somebody, of course, asks, hey, does that mean it wasn't insured today? SAT was insured as marine cargo for pre-launch phase. Launch policy didn't kick in because no ignition with intent to launch. So it should be right up to there. So while it's on the ground, before it actually becomes a projectile, it should be covered by marine cargo insurance.
So the marine cargo insurer is the one to pay out, not the launch insurer.
Right. And the marine cargo, $285 million insurance.
That insurance company is going, damn it.
Yeah, they're definitely going, damn it. And they're probably going to delay any payment on that for, well, at least until they've gone through every nut and bolt of what's left of that rocket.
Same where the explosion occurred, which is a very interesting location.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what they come out with.
But will this cover damage to the launch pad, the SpaceX vehicle, and satellite? We'll have to wait and see how this plays out. I would say that if... if Facebook or, well, no, it's Spacecom. Spacecom insured Amos 6 for $285 million. So it depends on how that gets paid out then. Because, of course, anytime that you're doing an insurance, you have to note beneficiaries first, second, third, you know, and so on down the line. So, could be interesting. Because the primary thing out there was SpaceX. That was their vehicle. A very expensive vehicle, of course. Then their payload, which, in, you know, I wonder if Facebook themselves, or, I'm sorry, internet.org, different organization, of course, I wonder if they had done a different insurance, because multiple parties would be able to insure perhaps different parts of the vehicle. Yeah, chat room, there are obviously some stipulations on what can be covered and what cannot. Well, yes, absolutely. Must agree with that. It should be very interesting. So this is something that, you know, I've never really thought about who was going to pay for a rocket going boom, because typically they were just NASA and it's just government, and it just all kind of goes into that kind of government slush fund. It's like, whoop, well, there goes our tax dollars up in flames.
Yeah.
But this is commercial. Yeah. So it's different. It's very different. And I wonder, okay, so the government uses SpaceX to launch stuff to ISS all the time. In fact, they had, you know, one of their payloads, that was the one that blew up. So I wonder how that played out. Because at least, you know, it has been done once. Well, that is for further research beyond the show. So, SpaceX has a really good track record. That's not going to really change. This is just them actually becoming more mortal, I suppose.
Yeah.
If you prick them, they do bleed.
Now, it'll be interesting to see what was the cause of the explosion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, as Elon Musk himself would be willing to say, and as a lot of other people said, you learn from your failures, you learn from your mistakes, you don't learn from success.
Yeah, they're actually very happy when things go boom, for the most part. You know, that there's that sadness, but then there's the, now what did that? Because we can't have that happen again. So anything that it could be, that definitely they got to go into that. So, all right, so moving along. The FDA... Federal Drug Administration orders antibacterials removed from consumer soaps. Quote, consumers may think antibacterial washes are more effective at preventing the spread of germs, but we have no scientific evidence that they are any better than plain soap and water.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, with the possibility that we're generating superbugs and antibacterial resistant nasties out there.
And killing off very beneficial bacteria.
Right. This comes really probably too late, but at least it's here. Now, how long is this going to take? By the way, that was by Dr. Janet Woodcock, director of the FDA's Center for Drug Evaluation and Research. In 2013, the FDA gave soap makers a year to show that adding antibacterial chemicals did anything at all to help them kill germs. It made the rule final today that no. So, they had until 2014 to basically do the tests. And then another, 2 years of evaluation?
Yeah.
Man, the government moves slow. Though, science takes time. Science takes time. We don't know what they did, but at least now we have this. Okay. So, in specifics, they were speaking of things like triclosan, which is used in 93% of liquid products labeled antibacterial or antimicrobial, at least 2,000 different products, according to the FDA. That's a lot. Of course, there's still the, all the hand sanitizers and things like that, they have a lot of antibacterials in them too, not just alcohol, which should be enough. But yeah, we've made a bed. We've made a bed, and now we have to lie in it. So hopefully we can remake it a better bed. Comfier sheets. Sheets that don't itch with bed bugs. I think that'd be good. Because, ooh, these bed bugs. Ooh. Nasty, nasty bed bugs. Some have already started removing them. In response to comments submitted by industry, the FDA has deferred rulemaking for 1 year on 3 additional ingredients used in consumer wash products. I may need some help with pronunciation here.
Benzalkonium chloride, benzethonium chloride, and chloroxylenol.
Chloroxylenol.
Chloroxylenol. Roxylenol. Yes.
No, that's an X.
It's chloroxylenol.
Chloroxylenol?
Chloroxylenol.
This is my favorite part of the show, where we all stumble over words. Anyway,
benzalkonium chloride.
Those three.
Benzethonium chloride. Yeah.
To allow for development and submission of new safety and effectiveness data for these ingredients, the FDA added. What do you guys think?
I think that... Why didn't this happen sooner?
There's that. There's all the stuff coming out showing that, hey, you know, a lot of the bacteria that's on our skin and everything else is actually rather beneficial for, well, our skin and us, and we are just, you know, straight out murdering it and having it to replenish it, which leads to problems.
Also, I'm just going, this is a consumer product. Don't we have, you know, departments to make sure that consumer products are do what they claim to do and are helpful?
Well, the thing is, they do what they say they're going to do. The problem is whether or not it's the active ingredients that they've added or just the simple act of washing with something that's called soap. So that was the test. They're no more effective than just washing with soap.
But again, shouldn't that have been tested before they were allowed to market themselves as being more beneficial?
Well, that's the thing. Now they're being tested for that. Before, it was just kind of a given. It's an we take a lot of things for rote. You know, it's like, well, it's that way. Do we know why it's that way? Not really. It's just that's what we've always done. It didn't necessarily cause any harm, so we didn't bother to fix it. But now, as the research continues to bring up things like superbacteria, staph infections that cannot be stopped, and the better study of the flora and fauna that live on our bodies in harmony, normally, you know, the more studies like that come up, the more you realize maybe that's actually doing more harm than good. Maybe we need to stop that. And that's when these questions get raised in the first place. So it's more along the lines of we didn't know what questions to ask at the time. And as science is a self-correcting thing, eventually we corrected. Maybe it was a little late, but better late than never. Yeah. You would think so, but look at all the... Oh, detox products. No, we're not even talking... We're not going to talk about detox products, chat room. We're not going to talk about them. Because I already have enough friends that are, like, you know, on my list for people that are doing the alternative medicine thing.
Well, it's simple. Detox products works great when you... It encourages you to stop eating the crap that's messing with you in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. The best detox product is called your liver.
And water.
Well, yes. Flushing as much water through your liver and kidneys as possible, that will detox you. It will also regulate your pH, you know, the acid content in your body, that will just happen normally too.
And whatever you do, you don't actually want alkaline blood. That's really a bad thing.
No, no. You see, the thing is, there's this thing that the human body does because we're warm-blooded creatures. See, now you got me talking about it. See, this is what happens.
Brief tangent.
Brief tangent. We are homeostasis machines because our brains like a certain temperature, our genitals like a certain temperature, the rest of us likes a certain temperature, so our bodies keep us a certain temperature. Maybe you've heard of it, body temperature. So, everything that our bodies do try to bring us back to that equilibrium. And that also involves, you know, keeping oxygen in the blood at the right levels, acids, bases, all of those have to be regulated. Just eat well, and keep hydrated, and your body is going to take care of itself because that's what it does. When it doesn't, that's when you go to the doctor to figure out why it's not.
Why is it not doing the thing?
So with that, let's talk about more infections.
Yay!
A virus that is breaking the rules of viruses. We're still kind of like, wait, what's this all about? Crazy virus, you know, this is out on sciencealert.com, which is usually a very good, you know, nice, even keeled. Yeah, they get a little excited about cool stuff, and yeah, they get a little reactionary about negative stuff, but some of the wording in here, I mean, it's almost clickbait, but this is not a clickbait site, so take that for whatever it's worth. They're worried. That's really what it comes down to. This crazy new virus just broke the rules of infection, WTF. A new type of virus has been identified. It's challenging long-held notions of what it takes for a virus to infect and proliferate in an animal host. I'm just going to read from this because they've done a really good job of actually narrowing it down to the common denominators here. So conventional wisdom states that if a single virus manages to insert its genes into a cell, the host becomes infected. But what if you chopped up that virus and tried stuffing the pieces into an animal cell separately? It wouldn't work, right? Well,
you wouldn't think so.
Well, this is apparently like the T-1000. So scientists from the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Disease, that's another department and agency that I did not know existed, have just discovered the viral equivalent of a bag full of body parts. Their words. And if you throw them at a cell wall, somehow, against all odds, they stick. It's the most bizarre thing. Virologist
science at the wall here and seeing what sticks. In this case, all of it.
It did, yeah. So virologist Edward Holmes from the University of Sydney, Australia, who wasn't involved in the study, is commenting on it like, "Wait, whoa, what? You found what?" If you compare it to the human body, it's like a person would have their legs, trunk, and arms all in different places, and then all the pieces come together in some ways to work as one single virus. I don't think anything else in nature moves this way. So we're already pretty aware that viruses act like they're alive, but they're not alive in the traditional sense.
No.
But they do replicate, but they're still not alive, and viruses are weird. They're probably the most alien thing that we know of.
They use the host as the means for reproduction.
Right.
And viruses can infect bacteria.
Now, yeah.
That's why there's viral infections and bacterial infections. We have antibiotics to deal with the the bacterial infections.
So what happens if you get infected with a bacteria that's infected with a virus?
You get infected by both.
That's bad. Just all of that's bad.
No, there's actually been cases where somebody's been infected by a bacteria that was host to a virus, and you smack the infection with antibacterials. That's great. You got rid of the bacterial infection, which was far, far less virulent than the virus. And now the virus has taken more hold, and the person gets worse.
Yeah.
Because now you've taken away some of the virus's food, and it's angry.
Yeah. Yeah, the bacteriophage, as the chat room's pointing out, yeah, all bad. All bad. Yes, we have heard of that. We don't like that much either.
But this is crazy, insane, and terrifying.
This is like something very, very much out of like a Neal Stephenson novel.
This is, you know, sci-fi.
Yeah, it's sci-fi, but oh wait, it's not sci-fi. We actually, oh geez, we found this.
Yeah.
This is kind of like, this is the viral equivalent of the Donald Trump candidacy.
Well, no, I
it shouldn't exist in nature. You know, it's something that only an author could come up with.
I am piqued with interest, but also terror at the name multi-component virus.
Multi-component virus. Oh dear. Yeah.
Yeah. The Waco? Guaico?
Oh no. It's been identified for the first time in living mosquitoes.
Excellent.
Oh no. Okay,
and
so
this is why I'm going.
You know,
to find
one
out
of the best
if mosquitoes are actually
in the world.
We need to really find out if mosquitoes are like a thing that is needed, like something we like needs to feed on them, and is their main food source. Because it's not, we just need to wipe out freaking mosquitoes.
Well, no,
let's find a way to wipe out all of them.
They're talking about that. There's apparently, 200 different species of mosquito, but only 20 species or something like that are
vital.
No, only 20 species bite humans.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The others are just kind of there and they do their thing.
So can we just wipe out the human body ones?
That's what they're thinking about doing, because then the others would still be in the ecosystem propping it up. Of course.
So a virus that's targeted on killing those mosquitoes.
Yeah,
this is where it all comes back.
Yeah, I heard about this on Science Friday. So it's a legitimate thing. They're actually considering it. However, with some of the latest Zika spraying and things like that, there was a mass murder. They were calling it a bee genocide, where there was
in North Carolina, they were spraying for Zika, and they didn't let the beekeepers know when they were spraying.
No, and they killed something like
it killed
several million.
Yeah, like 57 hives or something like that. I mean, it was
a massacre.
Bad news. I hope mosquitoes do not inherit the Earth. That's in no way something that I want. But yeah,
no,
so
we don't inherit the Earth. It's gonna be cephalopods.
And Keith Richards.
Unlike the multi-component Guaico Culex, C-U-L-E-X virus, which has its genetic material separated in different packages, segmented viruses, such as the influenza virus, have their DNA and RNA segmented within a single viral particle. This would make it harder. Oh, yeah, they are talking about Zika. Okay, so the Guaico Culex virus was discovered as part of a wider investigation by the U.S. Army medical team to isolate mosquito-borne viruses from all over the world in an effort to prevent epidemics like the recent spread of Zika taking researchers by surprise.
So this was a accidental discovery.
Yeah, while trying to combat Zika.
Yeah. So many of our wonderful discoveries happened accidentally. Champagne.
Mm-hmm.
Now this.
Yeah, so the research has been published in Cell, Host, and Microbe. I imagine that that would be a wonderful magazine, another publication to have on your coffee table. You know, I think that's something I need to start doing. I need to make some lists for the show. Fascinating mm-hmm. coffee table publications that we've discovered by reading these stories.
You know, hi. Do you want to be up on your science and world events?
Do you want
here
to
some
appear
publications
to be,
that we suggest you read?
Do you want to appear to be an intellectual? Have this on your coffee table.
You want to be an intellectual? Read these.
Yeah. You want a conversation starter and stopper? This is the one.
Well, Cell, Host, and Microbe. Yeah, have that on your coffee table.
That'll do it. And they also have some petri dishes with some yogurt or something in the refrigerator, too. That'll really that'll liven up the party. Just liven it right up. But you know what? I can't have nothing but bad news. Our friends over at UCF, the University of Central Florida, they have apparently developed a technology for killing metastatic breast cancer cells.
Oh, this actually piggybacks on something I saw earlier. I don't know the article. But they have found that a particular virus, and how it affects cells, if we can use the virus to piggyback a toxin as it penetrates the cell wall, we can use it to actually fight cancers.
I like it. Sounds good to me, though I'm not a doctor. Please don't take
malaria.
Anything that I say.
That's
for...
the one.
Is this the one?
No. No, malaria is the disease.
Oh, yeah, malaria.
And how it attacks the cells, it infiltrates not only healthy cells, but cancer cells. It just slips right on through. So if you just attach to the vector a toxin bomb.
So you give the cancer malaria.
And attached to the malaria is whatever means of destroying the cell. Because the malaria just gets in. It doesn't actually kill it.
Oh, okay.
But if you could attach a little package bomb of whatever it is that's going to destroy the cell once it's inside the cell, and you just use malaria as the vector.
You know, I'm uncomfortable with having malaria be the vector, because it's malaria. But hey, I will leave it to the scientists to figure out a way to make people.
Well, would you rather have malaria or chemo?
Well, also, most genetic modifications that are done nowadays are done using modified HIV.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, that's true. And apparently, malaria can also affect HIV cells as well. But back to this research, what we were talking about here, metastatic cancer cells that spread from the original tumor to the brain, lungs, and bones are the leading cause of death for most cancer patients, said the researcher who made the discovery, Annette Kaled. Her work is featured in the September edition of Clinical Cancer Research. In the study, she details how the peptide CT20, which she discovered in 2012, kills fleeing cells. It disrupts the folding mechanism inside cancer cells, mediated by a chaperonin. Yeah. If the inner workings of the cell can't fold into 3D units, the cell dies.
I had a moment.
Shooting cancer in the back as it's running away.
With a Ronin Samurai chaperone.
There you go. Nice. That'd be a great little webtoon. That should be done. Metastatic breast cancer cells have especially high levels of the chaperone. The higher the levels, the sicker the patient. By discovering how the peptide inhibits the chaperone's folding ability, Kaled said the scientists can develop multiple therapies for fighting the metastatic cancer. An advantage of the peptides is the amount that kills cancer cells do not kill healthy non-cancer cells. That means that using the CT20 peptide may have less traumatic side effects compared to most chemotherapies. As part of the research, J. Manuel Perez, a former UCF researcher who specializes in chemistry and nanotechnology, developed nanoparticles to transport the peptide specifically to the metastatic cancer cells. Nanotech saving the boobies.
Yep.
Save the tatas. That's what I'm saying here.
And the rest of the person.
Yes, absolutely. Of course, the rest of the person. But the tatas. Okay. All right, and no, I've already hit that one. And one more before we wrap up the first episode here this week. Out on Eureka Alert, I was going to bring this one up in one of the other shows, but we were going very, 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 very long. And an analysis in journal Nature Communications says humanity's impact on terrestrial environment has actually fallen behind population and economic growth. So there's more people and more money being made and less actual impact on the environment because of it. They are not keeping pace with each other. We are actually doing better.
Well, again, the idea of green living has taken hold in the zeitgeist, especially within Europe. You have entire nations now pushing towards being carbon neutral. There is also a flood of research into green technologies, better wind turbines, better solar, better hydro. So with all this investment into infrastructures and better science, we're starting to finally do better. We just have to keep it up and accelerate it.
Right. And that's where this kind of comes into play. environmental impacts are still, quote, frighteningly extensive, scientists warn. 3/4 of the planet are significantly altered. 97% of the species-rich regions are seriously altered. And findings come days before the kickoff of the IUCN World Conservation Congress in Hawaii. Now, this is... I would just like to point out to anyone that's listening that happens to have some conservative relatives or friends out there in the real world. Those folks, especially of the libertarian and ultra-conservative right bend, they would like to do away with organizations such as the Environmental Protection Agency. The Environmental Protection Agency has made it to where you can see the skyline of New York and Los Angeles. Whereas before, their invention by none other than Richard Nixon, there was serious smog problems, and people were going to die, like in China, with, you know, the Beijing problems.
Yeah.
Yeah, reference Beijing.
Where so, people are buying canned Canadian air. Spaceballs has happened.
Yeah. Perrier, we've talked about it on the show. They did that. Some of them are carrying around a more efficient article, you know, kind of like the oxygen-generating pumps that that some of the elderly folks are wearing. Yeah, and they just have a mask and they have this little filter pump down on their waist. But yeah, that's happening. And China doesn't really have an organization as effective as the Environmental Protection Agency here in the United States. If you take away that agency's teeth, you are going to have a problem. And to quote, oh, let's see, let's pick a song. Let Michael Jackson. I do believe that the children are our future. I would like them to breathe. I would like them to have nice, clean air to breathe in, so that way, when they put me in a home later, they can see me. or they're around to do it. So, the Environmental Protection Agency is actually having an impact. We see it thanks to extensive research like this here that is in the analysis in journal Nature Communications that says, hey, yeah, we're actually having an impact. We're slowing it down. So the curves no longer match each other. That's great news. But it's a little bit of news, and it's a little bit of change. As we've already looked at CO2 production in the world and everything like that, we can't slow down CO2 usage. We have to reverse it. We are not doing enough yet. So keep pushing. It's not over. Just because you make a little change, a little notch that says, yay, we're doing a good job here. Good. Do more of that thing that you did to get that notch. Don't rest on your laurels. We can't do that. We don't have a planet B, as they say.
We're too far down the line. I mean, soon, some of the projections says that Antarctica is going to be completely devoid of ice. It's just going to be land.
8,000 lakes already found on it. In Antarctica.
We also have a number of lakes drying up as we speak.
The world is changing. And, well, gosh darn it, you've done that. You've done that, people. Humanity, congratulations. You've changed the world. Do it again, but the other way. Yeah, I believe in you. You can do it. I mean, you've already done so much. Let's just turn it around. Can we do that? Let's do that. Please? Please? That'd be a wonderful thing. So, with that, ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude. Ah, there, that one worked too. That will conclude this part of the show. So we'll be back live next Friday about 9:30 p.m. Eastern. This for the second half of the show should drop Wednesday morning. In the meantime, the conversations will continue on the web. Head over to orellyradio.com, that's O-R-L-Y-R-A-D-I-O, for all the links right at the top of the page so you can watch us live. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus, and I have a cat. Yeah, there we go. There we go. Okay. There. One podcat in hand, on shoulder. Okay. You can also subscribe to the YouTube channel and also the Twitch channels. That will let you know that when we're live and when we've actually posted the video for the show. Of course, you can always watch us live right on our website at orellyradio.com, and you can join in the chat and give us new stories to follow and rabbit holes to follow down. Obviously, we're prone to wander, so you can definitely change the show rather readily by just feeding us some lines. Welcome to the show. Be a part of it. Thank you very much. If you've stayed with us all the way through the credits, how about you give us a hand? And if you have a few dollars to spare, you can contribute to the Patreon and get early access to the show releases. And also maybe some special perks here and there if I get enough enough followers. Just follow the Patreon link on the webpage over to patreon.com/orellyradio. You can also make a one-time donation via the donate button. But, you know, hey, if you can't fit us into your rainy day funds, do us a solid and share the show. Leave us a positive review wherever you found us, and we're always looking for new ideas for the show, so send those over to us. Shoot us a note, orellyradiopodcast@gmail.com, or if you're the more talkative sort, how about a voicemail at 470-222-6759. Always ready to take your call or text. Can't thank you enough for spending some time with us. Until next time, this has been O'Reilly Radio, part of the Cowan Services Network. Music for the show was created by Kevin McLeod of Incomptech.com.